right, here we go. Let's get Tom in here. Yeah. There he, oh, there he is. Door three, as always. Hey, Tommy, come on in. Welcome back.
So you're healthy.
So you're healthy.
I never heard what happened on Thursday.
I don't know what you're talking about. Driving in.
Okay.
Oh.
Don't mean to pry.
I had an intestinal thing, and because I don't have the plumbing nearby, I had to keep running back and forth and back and forth and just wore me out.
Sorry I brought it up.
It's all right. I'm fine now.
Okay.
All right. But thanks for asking. Oh, I did the math on it, too. While I was sitting there, I realized it's $30,000 to put in septic, right? And then I kept thinking, okay, so if I go to the bathroom normally, what was it, Jacob? Something like 300 times a year. Then do
right.
The math. It cost me $10 every time I move my bowels. I kept thinking, I gotta get the move bowel number down to like 2. And while I was running back and forth on Thursday, I got close to that number, Tom. I'm like, I think I'm like $6.50 right now. But there will be other days.
Did you ask? I guess we don't have to get too deep into it. But did you consider at any point running an extension cord out to the outhouse, or perhaps you could have broadcast from that location?
Oh. Here, Mr. Totally Normal Abdomen takes time off for that, and then goes to a bizarre wedding that takes place on a Monday, and you want me to broadcast?
No, I was having diarrhea from the outhouse.
You might get in the Guinness Book of World Records.
That's true.
All right, then you know what? Next time.
Good.
Next time. No more hard domestic cheeses for me. All right, here we go. Washingtonians. That are seeking to get the appointments for COVID vaccine sites, but health officials are discouraging what Tom did, because apparently, Tom, you are now criminal number one in the eyes of the Washington State Department of Health. You and your wife got in the car, you drove out, stopped at a remote location in Cle Elum, the Clum, and then pushed on from there. What's their main problem with the fact that people are traveling and getting a chance to really enjoy the beautiful state of Washington?
So what's interesting is that the reason Paige and I ended up doing that is because we read this news report that said that the distribution was uneven in the state, and that, for instance, in the Puget Sound area, there were not enough vaccine shots available for the amount of population. But there were other counties, especially in central and eastern Washington, that they were going wanting. There were not enough people to sign up. Now, we did the proper thing. Paige and I did early on. We signed up at various places, and then we kept getting bumped. They said, oh, well, actually, this doesn't really work, and this is more for second and all of this. And so after about 2 months of waiting, we decided to just go on and see whether there was any in the state. At this point, they weren't discouraging any of this. But Paige and I did, like, there were places in Seattle that we decided not to sign up for because they were clearly designed for minority communities and, you know, places like CMAR. And we didn't want to, you know, impact any of the minority populations. But then we saw a relatively big city site in Yakima, and they had dozens and dozens of open appointments. So we went ahead and signed up. It was like 3 weeks away. It wasn't like it was something that we, rushed out for. And so we ended up doing that. And even at the time, I think Joey, the garbage man, called me out and says, Tom, are you depriving somebody in Yakima of that? And I said, that was a consideration. Now, what's interesting about what's happening now versus when we did it is, we were qualified.
Oh, yeah.
We're both over 65. The profile now is that people, I know it's hard to believe that I'm that as old as I am.
I can't believe it.
But what's happening now is that you can sign up for these places, say in Yakima or far flung from where the city population, the urban population of the Puget Sound area is. You can sign up and you can answer everything truthfully, like, no, I don't qualify. No, I'm not. I don't have 2 comorbidities. No, I'm not over whatever it is, 50. But they still allow you to make an appointment. You're not supposed to make the appointment, but a lot of people do. And say, well, if you can make an appointment, it must be okay. And so now the state had to come out and just say, by the way, there are 2 reasons not to do this. first off, if you don't qualify, you shouldn't get it anyway. But secondly, what you should do is you should stay in your own area because supposedly there's been an equitable distribution. You just have to wait your turn. And then the second thing is, and this was a concern for us, that if you have a side effect, it could hit you and it'd be better if you're closer to home. Now, luckily, I didn't have any impact and it didn't hit Paige for a couple of days. So we had plenty of time to get back home. But still, it's something to consider.
Well, that's an example. Right. It's an example of the government trying to figure out how many need to go to how many areas. And they're guessing, right? This is government control of supply. And demand is always going to be different. And we'll show you where things really need to be. And in this case, they send, I don't know how many, what the percentage of the population and the number of vaccines to Yakima. But apparently, if you go online right now, they got lots in Yakima. And you can go there on Sunday. Go in there on Monday, and they want to discourage it. But if the thing is sitting there and the people in Yakima aren't using it, there must be a reason they're not using it. So why not go?
Yes.
The fact that they haven't come right out and said, don't get in the car and drive. But if they want people to be vaccinated, people will go wherever they have to go. In the stories, and people are flying in from some other states. They're driving longer distances
Arizona.
In order to get here. Yeah, why not? Heck, if it's there, go get it. If we're supposed to go ahead and everybody get vaccinated, then go ahead and
also
get to Yakima.
So when Paige and I did it too, we just went to a local pharmacy. It was a Rite Aid in Yakima. But the ones they're talking about now is they opened a big federal site where they could do like 2,000 a day. And that's where they say that there should be plenty of opportunities, but they still kind of discourage people from driving all the way from Seattle to Yakima.
Yeah. Did you care what shot you got? Because people are saying you want the Johnson & Johnson and the Jensen because you only get to get it once.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to have the same effects on people as the Moderna on women. It really kind of kicks women's rear ends on the second shot. So if you don't want to have to deal with that, then go there and get the J&J.
I wanted the Pfizer just because it was the first and I figured it was the best. But just over the weekend, I did hear a newscast that says it turns out the Pfizer isn't as effective against the South African variant.
I saw that,
So because of that, it's like, so maybe the Moderna. But I think I would have taken any or all three if they whatever they had to offer, I'd take.
I wonder why people in Yakima are not getting the ones that they're sending them. I would assume there is there's an immigrant population that might not they might be shut out, might be concerned that if they give their information that they will be sent back to wherever they came from, or there might be some hesitance in some demographics that they simply don't want it. Still, the numbers are. If you look at most of the places in the United States that have some vaccine hesitance, not anti-vax, there's a difference between the two. Vaccine hesitant, it tends to be throughout the southeastern part of the United States, primarily black men and Republican men. And sometimes those lines cross over. In Texas as well, about one out of four Republican guys are like, nope, not going to get it. And the number of black men has been slowly going down that were hesitant on it, and they seem to sort of move in the direction. My thing was, I don't trust the government. Fauci has lied to us. Joe Biden lies to us almost every single day when he opens his mouth and reads from the teleprompter. So I don't get it.
I heard John. Right? That's right. I heard that you made an announcement on Friday.
Right. Let me finish with Joe's lies. So with Joe's lies or Fauci's lies or Governor Inslee's just pull stuff out of my rear end and call it science stuff, I sort of just naturally thought, I don't want to get it. My doctor said, go ahead, get it anyway. And then Nicole Thompson, Dory's producer, said, listen, if you don't get the vaccine and you get booked for some auction and then all of a sudden you can't go because you've gotten COVID, you'd really feel bad about it. So I've signed up for the one in Yakima. I'll be driving to the beautiful Yak, known as the Las Vegas of Yakima. That's right. I'm going to wear my mask. I'm doing a double mask. By the way, the locals, where you come into the Clum and you go to Mike's Tavern and you're sitting outside, you don't have to wear a mask. So you don't need to wear a mask where you're sitting outside. And then they get up and they put their mask on. They walk over to the car. They're still outside. They sit back down again. But they double mask up. Yep. Those are the
by the way,
truly yeah, brainwashed. Yes, sir.
You mentioned the hesitancy business. This article, the Seattle Times article, does a profile that at one might have thought that Yakima County was was exhibiting hesitancy, but they have like 17%, which is not that far off from the Puget Sound region. And yeah, they were doing specific outreach to agricultural workers because they were just harder to reach. So that makes some sense. But I'm glad you're getting a shot, John.
Thank you, Tom. The Wall Street Journal decides to compile, and I was shocked that they did this. I like the Wall Street Journal, but they put together all the songs. They have sort of a vaccine theme. Because you had to be a
big shot. Billy Joel, Big Shot.
Okay, we don't need to hear the whole song.
Pat Benatar with Hit Me With Your Best Shot. No, I can't. Yeah, stupid computer won't let me play songs one after the other. And then they listened to them all, and Jacob sat through all of it. And some originals. Play a couple originals there, Jacob, please.
Okay, this one's by Jensen McRae. It's called Immune.
Now, what's great about that song, John, is it's set up. You got these two friends, I assume boyfriend or girlfriend, at least. They hook up in their car while waiting in the long line at Dodger Stadium vaccination site. And they do this emo song. I thought that was pretty original and clever.
As soon as this thing gets behind us, the sooner the better. I'm so sick of the vaccine talk and COVID talk and the masks and all the other stuff. Would like to see it just quickly fade. Tom, do you agree that, do you think we'll be changed forever because of this pandemic?
Definitely not forever. I think it'll be a reference point for us. It's a bit like how the Macarena actually, you know, was ridiculous at the time, but it does situate us in a particular moment. For some reason, I have it associated with, unfortunately, Al Gore's presidency or his non-presidency. And it's like, it's just like a checkpoint. Oh, yeah, you know, remember when. I don't think, I mean, obviously it's going to affect those of us who had family members, who didn't survive. But I think it'll be more of a historical kind of, reference point more than anything else.
I'm hoping that what we learned from all of this is that you cannot, there's a certain list of risk, the risk adverse. And the idea of you take chances, and there's no way the elected officials, the great powers that be, can protect you from everything. And for those of us that turn towards them in order for them to be able to save us from this horrible thing. Again, if you look at the numbers overall from the Black Plague all the way through the 1918, fairly small percentage of people that actually die of this one, but how quickly we just turn towards and throw our undying faith and trust in the experts and the use of the word science. So I'm hoping that slowly, just like with Donald Trump's presidency, that it slowly begins to erode that and people begin to become more sort of aware of what they would like to do with their life, the chances that they're willing to take, and maybe at some point the fact that the government is unable to just have this overarching power on top of us to stop everything, to destroy as many lives as they did, in order to save but of one life. Hopefully people kind of wake up to that and we're able to push back and people begin to say, no, I'd rather have control over my own life as opposed to trusting those people that use the word science and have masks on while doing press conferences, even though they've been vaccinated more than 3 months ago. How do you trust somebody who uses the word science over and over again, but has a mask on in front of people when there's people that are 15 to 30 feet away from them and everyone knows it's nothing more than show? So when you are really nothing more than show, Governor Inslee, people begin to distrust you, and they begin to then distrust the idea that government is going to be there to protect them. So hopefully it makes us more independent and stronger.
See, and that, what's ironic is I think you're 100% wrong. I think, if anything, this has shown the efficacy of big government. In fact, that's one of the basis of the philosophy behind Joe Biden's government right now, is that they think because of its success dealing with this and the truth that big government could handle this kind of stuff, that there's more faith in government. And right now you're seeing a lot of these think pieces, thought pieces. We'll see if they bear themselves out politically, that maybe this is a turnaround, and government can be seen as something that can save you, that can give you stimulus checks, that can get a vaccine to you, that can save the day. So it may be that we're both looking at what we want to see come out, confirming our own preferences. But right now, I think more people think government handled this well than not handled it well. And in fact, I would, and I think you would agree with this, the demise of the Trump re-election campaign happened because of this, because a lot of Americans thought he didn't handle it properly or treated it as seriously as maybe it should have.
I would say that in the very beginning, when he stopped China from coming in, he was hit for a xenophobe, and he was quoting from Nancy, and the others were saying, you know, you don't need to worry about this. But then when he made it about himself, when really he should have stepped up in April and May and June and, you know, done more to lead as opposed to take it personally. But if you want to talk about government, look at the EU. The EU said, we will do this. We want to control the amount of money that the pharmacy companies make on this. So they reduced the profitability of it. And then when they saw that they were way behind on the eight ball, EU said, well, then we'll just take advantage of what America is doing and the pharmaceutical companies that are making money there. EU was so concerned with profiteering that they destroyed the ability to create a vaccine there, and they piggybacked off of the free market capitalism here. The fact that the government closed down, locked down, stopped businesses in order to prevent the curve, which was infrastructure, did, I think, hopefully we see in a couple of years, more damage than good. Tracy Taylor looked at traffic for us on a Monday. Alrighty, thanks, Keel Mortgage, Laura Keel, and everybody there at Keel Mortgage for trusting the Tom and Curley Show to get out the good word that you are the ones to call when it comes to mortgage refinancing. You want to be able to get a reverse mortgage, it might be right for you. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. The email went out, Tom, from the chorus there at Mount Vernon Presbyterian Church. Quote, I plan on being there this Tuesday, March 10th. Hoping many of you will be there as well. This is from the music director. He had said the stresses and strains and concerns about the virus, but he felt that everybody was going to be on their best behavior when you walked in the door there at the church for the rehearsal that was going to be taking place. It was just going to be a two-hour rehearsal. I think 60 showed up altogether. They had hand sanitizer. Somebody had brought some oranges or some tangerines, and they were cut up and placed on the side. But people avoided hugging one another. Although it's a huggy church, often described that way. And they didn't share sheet music. They did everything that they were supposed to do according to what was out there at the time. And then after a 2.5 hour practice, everybody knows the story of what had happened next. I think it was 45 members of that chorus had come down with it. I think it was three that were hospitalized and two that lost their life. The New York Times put a very long piece together walking us through not only the rehearsal and then the aftermath and then where the chorus was in the months following that. Am I missing anything to the lead up on that, Tom?
No, I think that's about right. The key is that this rehearsal happened the day before. The governor announced that groups of 250 and more should not get together. So even in this choir had 120 people in it, and only about half of them showed up at this particular rehearsal that was It wasn't like a mandatory rehearsal. So they had only half them. Well, even by those, by the governor's the next day standards, they would have been okay. Because at this time, the hunch was that it was tactile, that you had to touch somebody or touch a surface that had been touched. And so they were playing by the rules that they understood it. The aerosol nature of the of COVID-19 was not obvious. In fact, I think it was around this time when Redfield from the CDC said that he didn't, at this point, he didn't think masks were necessary as long as you washed your hands all the time and didn't touch things that other people were touching. So this was in the very, very early stages of this disease.
It was the World Health Organization that had basically downplayed any of the chances of transmission. They said that the respiratory droplets would need to be large. The person would have to sneeze or cough in front of you. I thought the most sort of telling and sort of sad part of this was the fact that the music director and some other people were then being blamed later on for coming together and singing, and then this for Adam Burdick, is that I believe his
Burdick,
name?
Yeah.
That what he had to suffer from, he didn't know any more than anyone else knew. And the fact that they all came together, and then how later on they were then being described as a super spreader.
Yes. Well, the thing is, there's little denial that they were a super spreading event. However, the thrust of this article, it starts off, and he primarily, you can't blame individual choir members, but he as the director was, you know, was really downplay. I mean, they hit him hard, downtrodden for daring to hold this kind of rehearsal. How dare he, how selfish and all of this. But the thrust of the article was that instead, rather than being condemned, they should be praised that that choir was so forthcoming about what exactly they did, who they did it with, where the groups were, the interactions, that they said that was, they provided so much firsthand, like 65 different people's firsthand information about how they interacted, that it helped establish that, you know, the stuff that it was in the aerosol, it was in the air that the disease was gotten, and that they actually did a great thing for the research community by providing so much information. They were not trying to hide it. They weren't in denial and all this. They were saying, oh, my God, whatever. And I think that's the lesson we have to take. In fact, I think the article quotes one of the family members, son or daughter of one of the two poor women who died. One was, I think, 81. The other was 83. That at least they feel like something good came out of their death because they were, they hope that they had managed to stop so many other choirs. Because choirs, now in retrospect, choirs are seen like they are like the definition of a super spreader event because everyone's singing. So you're projecting more than you normally would in any other kind of human interaction. So in a lot of ways, they were like the first victims and helped the rest of us maybe not join them.
It was, and I think the openness of everyone not trying to cover anything and explained how long, where everybody stood. Right, this is the first group of people that were all together singing. Yep. They said they tried to have 6 feet between them, but in a closed space. They also describe in the article that it was cold that night, but once everyone got in there, the body temperature heated up the room so much so that the heating and cooling system that was there in the church stopped, didn't need it to be on, and then therefore the air became more stagnant, and then that's what you end up with. So I think Nikki was the name of the one, the 83-year-old that ended
Nikki
up
Hamilton,
in the hospital.
I think.
And I also felt that the article just did such a wonderful job of explaining how important song is.
Yes.
That Adam felt, the music director felt, and everybody else as well, that we need to sing. Anyway, when I was in school, the nuns used to say to us, why do we sing? We sing because our hearts are so full of joy that words cannot carry our emotions. So that is why we sing. And you really get this feeling that this group, this choir, coming back from the death, they were very, very close to everybody. And they said, well, of course we need to sing. So then they rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and then put what they sort of a Zoom choir of some sort.
It was a virtual choir. choir concert. My brother and sister-in-law run a choir, and they did the same kind of thing where they had everybody sing their own parts individually. They were all sent to the director, and then the directors would edit it together with the right, you know, the basses with the basses and the altos and all that. And they ended up putting together this choir concert that they were all really very happy with. And it's so, again, poignant. About half of the members decided they just couldn't do it. They didn't have it in their heart to do it. It put them too close to their grieving of their fellow choir members. Others thought it was just technologically tough. But to me, the one thing that rang the truest, I love this. I've been in, you know, millions of choirs, it feels like, ever since I was you know, like in third or fourth grade. I was in the church choir and the school choir, you know, all the way up through college. And one of the things they said was, it's really difficult for choir members who are used to sitting, you know, in a group with like maybe 10 to 12 other people singing the same note, how powerful you feel like you are just, you're at the front of this engine. They say, but unfortunately,
especially when when you have the harmony,
yes,
know what I mean? When you're under it, when that note, and you're on that harmony note, and
yeah.
You feel like you're being lifted up off of the ground. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, completely.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that they said was difficult for the virtuals, everybody had to record themselves solo, and so many of them were stunned and horrified at how wimpy their voices sounded alone, that they needed that communal powerhouse. And it's, that's one of the greatest things about singing. Like, I don't like choral music, just listening to it in the audience, but when you're singing it, because you have your singing one part, you are aware of all the other, like, four or five different parts going on at the same time. That is an amazing experience.
Here's a little bit.
Sing on.
Hopefully that's not Sondheim, or we are getting here.
It's close enough to musical theater. I'll take it.
That's all right. Okay, we'll take it. We wrapped it up in a nice story from the New York Times, so I think we got that by the critics. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. Bucky's Auto Service Centers, Sean, does that sound good?
Huh? Sure, why not? Bucky's. Let's get it out of the way.
There you go, Bucky. Not out of the way, just get a chance to sort of roll around it like a dog on a dead raccoon. Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations, you can't go wrong. They've got them around for 51 years. That's a lot of rolling around on a dead raccoon. I don't know if they're going to like that spot.
Probably not, but, you know, you did it anyway, so...
Too late now. The wife is furious, Tom. She and he both wanted to save money. That seemed like a good idea. So, and why not at the same time eat healthy? So she sends her husband off to work, and they're saving money because he's not spending it on fast food, and he's going to live a long, healthy life, and both of them achieving exactly what they wanted. Except there's a twist to the story that makes it worthwhile talking about, Tom.
That's right. Guess what? The husband was lying through his teeth. Here's a happy couple. They decide that they want to save up enough money to buy a flat. And they figured out that they're spending, he always ate out for lunch, usually fast food, and he was spending £200 a month. And so they figured that we could save a lot more money if the wife, she said, I'll make you these sandwiches. Not only will we be saving money, but we'll also, you know, be giving you a healthier diet. He says, okay, sure.
Let me help. I'm going to make you a sandwich so we can save some money for a flat, and I'm saving £200.
I had to add the British accent, Tom, because the word flat and pounds might throw some of the listeners off. Yes.
Wow. You picked up on that, John, perfectly. So... Thanks, everything's going along hunky-dory for months, and then they made the mistake of having a colleague of the husband's, a friend who work, a co-worker, come and have dinner with them. And in the process, this friend happens to just mention that, boy, he really was impressed with those sandwiches that she made every day.
I was so impressed with those sandwiches. They were the best that I'd ever had. Archie McBadenstein's makes the best sandwiches anywhere around. But
he did think that she was charging a little too much, maybe, for it, as good as they were.
Trying to squeeze the pounds on an old man now, do you do that, hen?
So, to which the wife then said, what do you mean? I'm not charging anything.
I'm not charging anything. You're slapping him on the back and what, ain't ya?
And it turns out that dastardly husband was selling his wife's sandwich to his friend and taking that money and going to the fast food place and eating King's Ransom every day.
The fish and chips is all they're going to eat that. There's nothing wrong with some fish and chips.
The wife is apoplectic.
Apoplectic! I can't remember my voice. I don't remember which voice I had.
And the husband was unapologetic.
I'm not going to apologize for anything.
I don't owe you an apology. To heck with you. So he ran off with the priest. Friend.
Little meat. Try a little priest.
Yes, that's right. Mrs. Lovett and Sweeney Todd, it turns out.
Oh,
and
right,
Stephen Sondheim came along and wrote a musical about them. Anyway,
Are they okay? Did they get the flat? And what's the happy ending?
Well, no, it sounds like right now she says, well, that's it. I'm refusing to make any more sandwiches. And he says, well, I don't know what you're so angry about. To heck with you. End of story. Curtain.
Well, he was making money on the sandwiches. And then so he was still saving money, right? By buying unhealthy food. Yeah.
That's his argument. But here's the catch. He said, boy, those sandwiches are so good. Why don't you make me two a day? So he was getting her to spend a little more than they should have been spending. Oh, marriage is hard.
Oh, yeah.